Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Joining me this evening is Izzy Hawkins, an actor who uses her online platform to discuss sobriety after coming into recovery from the addiction of alcohol at the age of 21. And Izzy joins me to chat about her sobriety journey and also tells us all about Sobermas, which is like Christmas, but sober. The number, as usual, 087-188-0008. Let me just try. Izzy, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, finally. My God.
Yay!
This is the year 2023. Richard Nixon could ring the moon in 1969 and we can't even
make a phone call to
the United Kingdom.
I don't know how you do it. Live radio is so stressful.
I know. I've just waffled on for the last 3 or 4 minutes since just had to
sure
get you back on the line
job.
Again.
But
Izzy,
but it's a pleasure we
were only talking a couple of weeks ago about, we had an email from a woman who didn't want her husband's family over because they always get drunk and ruin Christmas, right? And I myself even remember my family. My father was a bit of a drinker, you know, and he'd always make life difficult every now and again, you know, at Christmas time, he'd drink too much. And so, you know, alcoholics or people who drink too much generally can make life difficult for people at Christmas. And you're talking about Sobermas. Now, I'm not a drinker. I don't drink at all. So there'll be a sober Christmas in my household. But for a lot of people,
lovely,
there won't be.
No. Yeah, and which, can I just say, up until this year, I'd never heard of Sobermas. This must be a new phrase, which I'm very excited about. We've got Dry Jan. We've now got Sobermas. So that's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, for lots of people, like, Christmas is associated, or alcohol is associated with Christmas. It's an incredibly boozy holiday. And for me, like, my entire family drinks. I'm the only person that is sober in over the holidays. But kind of, I just, you know, I talk a lot about sobriety on my online, on social media. And I just want people to know that it is possible. You can have fun. And also, you can end up, like, not getting into dysfunctional arguments with lots of different people if you're one of those people. And it can be a really pleasant experience.
Yeah, and it's cool to be sober, by the way. It's okay to be sober.
Yes.
Now, I don't know what it's like in the UK, but here in Ireland, traditionally, we're quite famous for drinking too much. And if you're not a drinker, I find even when I go out somewhere, say if you go to a bar or whatever it is, you know, we go for the radio Christmas parties or whatever, somebody's always going to go, "Oh, you're your man off the radio. Will you have a drink?" And I go, "No, I don't drink." "Go on, you'll have one." And I go, "No, I don't want one. Thanks very much." "Go on, you'll just have one for me, will you?" People almost push alcohol on you, don't they?
Yes, yes. And that is something that I feel like it's starting to change. And I feel like there's a big sobriety boom that is currently happening or starting to happen. And
yeah,
but like I stopped drinking when I was 21. Alcoholism runs in my family. My heritage is Irish, so my grandfather was Irish and my great grandfather was Irish, so
that's where
there's
it
all, there's
from,
a
so.
Bit yeah. Well, I don't know, who knows, is it a gene? Like, I just, we have no idea. But and I would say that was pushed on them. Like, but I think it was my great grandfather who ended up getting sober, and like everyone was always on tenterhooks because everybody was constantly trying to get him to drink. And I don't know why we have this obsession with a feeling like maybe our fun is going to be spoiled if other people aren't drinking with us. And we like to push it. It's the only drug in the world, really, that I feel like, you know, when someone says, "Oh, I'm sober, I've stopped drinking," people go, "Oh, that's a shame." So that's not great.
Yeah, that's a bit tough, isn't it? Why not?
Yeah.
They're going to question, "Why aren't you drinking? Why not?" So when did your problem, if you want to call it a problem, and it was a problem, I suppose, your alcohol addiction, you know, when did it start for you?
I think I knew maybe even when I was 14, like I just felt like I drank differently to my friends. I was using it to numb out and to self-medicate right from the get-go, and I just loved it. And if I could have been drunk the whole time, I would have been. And I think it became a real problem for me kind of when I left home at 18 and went off to London to do a kind of like advertising sales role. And at that point, I just, like, I'd been let loose into the world, and it was just constant, like, drinking to blackout, drinking at events, and then drinking. I started drinking in the mornings to deal with the anxiety, and kind of by 21, I was what you would associate with alcoholism. Really, like, lost my job, relationships were in tatters. It just stole everything from me, basically.
And I was question. When you were 14 years of age and you said you noticed you were different to your friends because, okay, you weren't just, you know, having the odd can every now and again, you were taking it a bit more serious because you wanted to mask out problems or you wanted to go to numb out, as you said. Was there reasons for that or was there a problem in your life or was there something you needed to mask out? Because, you know, when people say they kind of drink to hide problems, it's like taking antidepressants, you know. You kind of drink to hide a problem or to mask a problem. So was there a problem in your life?
I mean, I'm the child of an alcoholic who is in recovery, and who came into recovery when I was 14. So I think, and I'm the eldest child, so I feel like a lot of that that fell on my shoulders. I'm one of four kids, so I feel like by the time I hit 14 and my parent got sober, I was like, oof, that was heavy.
Yeah,
like that was quite difficult, and you know, then there was divorce in my family, so I feel like there was lots of things that I didn't have the tools to deal with any of this.
Yeah, a lot of traumatic experiences, of course. Yeah,
yeah, and I think also I have a very busy brain, and I struggle with I had social anxiety there's a myriad of a really bad concoction of things that I think led to me wanting to numb out. But yeah, I'd probably say I'm really interested in the link between childhood trauma and abusing substances.
Yeah. And when you say, you know, you got to a point at 21 where you were kind of relationships were in tatters, you were losing jobs. Were you losing jobs because you were fired, because you were arriving in, you know, with a few drinks on you? Or were you just not turning up for work? What was happening there?
I mean, yeah, I got signed off work quite a few times because my behavior I wasn't able to keep up with the party lifestyle. And like, I was working in advertising sales, so there's an element of partying that can get, but it just started to like take me down. And then I got fired for falling asleep in a toilet drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning. And like, my colleagues are kind of aware that this is becoming a problem. That'll do it. hiding alcohol in my drawers at work and just to try and get through the day. Because I was like shaking and withdrawing, and people are looking at a 21-year-old being like, she doesn't have a drinking problem, like,
yeah,
that.
She's a kid, for God's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm looking at my behavior going like, I recognize this because I've seen this in my parents.
Mm. And when you talk about your relationships, then were in tatters or relationship was in tatters. I mean, you would imagine love would be enough to make you want to stop something, but sometimes it just isn't enough, is it?
No, and I think that's the thing with, you know, whether we call it alcoholism, addiction, something like substance abuse, is I think, and we're learning a lot about the brain and what that means and how the drug of choice can override everything else in your life. But like, I had been the child of an alcoholic begging the parent to get sober and not understanding why they couldn't do it for me. And then I ended up being the same person. Like, I had a boyfriend that was like, please stop this behavior, it's craziness. And I was like, I can't. And we see it time and time again, yeah, is parents choosing alcohol over their kids and being like, not having empathy or understanding as to why that is. But yeah, it's like, they're not in their right minds, they're not well.
The worst story I ever heard, going back a good few years ago, I had a guy in the air who was an alcoholic, and you know, and he couldn't afford to be an alcoholic because sometimes people just can't afford to be alcoholics, but he was.
Yeah.
And he said, the worst thing I ever did was on Christmas Day, he took one of his kids' toys back to the shop and got a refund just so he could get money for drink.
Yeah. And I mean, that's desperation, right?
Oh, that is desperation. And the same guy then told me he had no money, so he went into a hospital and started drinking the hand sanitizer. And I'm going, that's like, how bad does it have to get? So you made a decision. Can you remember that day that you made a decision and said, that's it, I'm finishing, I'm done with this?
Yeah, and it had been building slowly, and I'd started to want to ask for help. But being 21, people were like, yeah, but you're 21, like, you're supposed to be partying and messing up, and like, it's like a rite of passage. And so I actually found it really hard to get people to take me seriously in terms of wanting to get sober. And I started going to AA, and I sort of like wasn't taking that seriously. And then my boyfriend kind of just got to the end of his tether, and it was actually the day that he walked out, I was like, oh, okay, like, that's everything now. Like, he was the last thing to kind of go.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was at that point that I thought, okay, I need to like sort this out.
Yeah, because I'm going to destroy my life. Yeah.
Yes, and I had. Like, I wanted to go to drama school. I wanted to be an actor, and I was just too... I was drunk. I was just drunk all the time. And
how much were you drinking, like, at the height of it? How much were you drinking?
It's kind of hard to remember at this point, but like I was buying bottles of vodka and pouring it into water bottles and like mixing it with a little bit of squash and pretending it was squash. So it was just like enough to try and get me through the day. And then some days I would just have too much and I would tip over the edge into blackout and then humiliate myself. I'd say I was getting through.
It's so sad, isn't it? You know, at 21.
It's so sad.
Yeah. I mean, and the problem is when you talk to a friend and you ring them up and say, listen, I think I've got a problem. And they say, okay, I'll meet you at the pub and we'll talk about it. So, you know. Young people just think that's what you should be doing. You should be drinking anyway. That's fun. You know, because, but the difference is they could socially drink. You couldn't socially drink.
No. I'd have one and that was that. Like I was off to the races. It was like I couldn't just have one. I never understood those people that could like have a glass of wine and then put the bottle back in the fridge. I was like, what is wrong with those people?
Yeah, just drink the bottle. Drink the whole bottle. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So the day your boyfriend walked out, your life is a mess. There's no possibility you're going to drama school unless you can solve this problem. So how did you solve the problem? Was it just a cold turkey situation?
No, I mean, I actually went and begged my family for help and people crowdfunded and sent me to treatment. And I went to treatment for 4 months.
Okay.
Which I'm incredibly lucky that I got to do that because that's not accessible. It's incredibly, it's an expensive thing. And I was very lucky to have access to that. I went to like a slightly cheaper one. And I think it was £4,000 a month.
Okay.
Whereas it's something like the Priory, you're looking at like £15,000 a month. And that was 15 years ago that the Priory was that much. So dread to think what it is now. Yeah.
Well, everybody, the Priory would be quite famous, actually. We've heard of very famous people going to the Priory. So that's kind of famous place. But okay, but there is places over here similar, by the way. There are some places which are voluntarily run. There are other places you can pay privately to go to as well, to go into rehab and stay off the alcohol.
Well, and the treatment centre I was in, I was with other addicts. So like some people had come straight from prison. And like, so it was kind of, it was a real mixture of people. It wasn't like the Priory. It wasn't just like private clients. And I'm kind of really glad that I got to do it with people from all different walks of life because we all had different perspectives and different things to offer to that.
Yeah, and so what was that 4 month experience like? At any stage did you feel like giving up? Did you feel like I'm out of here, I've had enough of this, carry on?
Yeah, and I think I have a mind that tends to spiral and like that's where I end up drinking. So you know, I'd have a spiral, an emotional spiral of some kind, and then I'd be like, well, the only solution to this is drinking. That's all I'd done up until the age of 21. And so when I'd have an emotional spiral, I'd be like, I'm leaving. Like I'm going, I'm going to leave, I'm going to run away and I'm going to drink. Because I drank on every emotion. So learning to kind of stop that process in its tracks was really difficult. But yeah, there were many times that I wanted to ditch it and run away and just thinking, and also thinking, oh my God, 21 and sober. Like I've now got to go back out into the world where all my friends are like just leaving uni and I can't drink with them. I'm going to have to do my 20s sober if I take this seriously.
Yeah. So you did.
So, I did. I did that.
So 4 months later, you come out, you're dry. Yeah. You're sober. And how was temptation? Was that tough or do you think the 4 months did it for you and you learned that, you know, hey, life can be okay without alcohol?
No, it was tough, I would say. I mean, I was also, there's like a pink cloud of sobriety that you live on, I'd say, in the first year, where it's like, oh, this is all a bit new and exciting. And like doing it in community was really important. So like all the people that I left treatment with, I stayed in the local area. I got a job as like a cleaner and tried to just take a year out to just be sober because it felt like a full-time job. There were moments. It's like when I went back to the house share that I was in and there was vodka in the cupboard, I was like, I remember there being a moment like where I wanted to drink it and then being like, no, I'm not. I'm just picking up the phone and calling somebody. I mean, like, I really feel like I want to drink this vodka and then being like, that's a really bad idea. Don't do that.
Yeah. Did you have to avoid things like when people would ring up and say, listen, we're all meeting at the weekend. It's Johnny's birthday. We're going out. Did you go? Or did you avoid those kind of thing? Because, you know, at that age, obviously, there's lots of things going on. There's events.
Yeah, Absolutely. And I probably took a 6 month hiatus where I was like, I'm just going to focus on hanging out with sober people for a minute. And then I have a really good group of girlfriends who I've known since school. And I remember our first trip away, we all went to Centre Park together and they were all drinking, but they're all very safe drinkers. Like they'll just have a couple of glasses or whatever. And that's it for the night. And I just remember being like, okay, I can do this. But because I was in a supportive environment, that was such a good first experience for me. And then after that, I was like, I can do this. And so sometimes I go out clubbing with everybody and I'd just be sober. I'd be designated driver.
So you kind of felt useful.
I was a useful person. I was like mum. I was mum on the night out. And I was also the person that could be like, guys, you know what happened last night? The next day
you'd be the notebook the next morning. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just about kind of forming new identities and having a deeper, more authentic relationship with yourself and understanding what makes you uncomfortable and like why does that make you uncomfortable and what are your fears and what can you be brave about. And I just think it's such an interesting journey of self-discovery that I wouldn't have gone on if I'd been drinking.
And did you ever relapse? At any point, did you kind of have a quick one on the sly somewhere, or did you ever relapse?
I've not had a drink since the day I stopped, so it'll be 9 years in February. I did, well, however, then. Thank you so much. But I did. There was a moment that I did relapse weirdly on a an over the counter drug, codeine. Okay. Because I was still very uncomfortable with myself in the first year, and I felt like maybe I needed more, like some therapy, and I stopped working. I kind of was just focused on being sober. And I think I stopped working on my noggin, which was the thing that probably needed a little bit more TLC. And so, but I outed myself. As soon as you kind of out yourself to people and say, like, I'm doing this thing and you're not skulking around corners and hiding something, then when there's nowhere to hide, that's usually the moment that you're about to stop doing something. So,
okay. So what? You just took a few codeine tablets? Just to
I would numb out. I mean, it actually started with, what did it start with? It was a dentist situation. It was like I had a really bad tooth. And so a dentist gave me something for the pain. Was it a dentist or a doctor? I can't remember. Someone gave me something for the pain and I didn't tell anybody that they had, which is a classic thing.
I'll hide this.
I'll hide this and I'll use it if I need to. And then my grandmother died and it was at the funeral. And I thought, I'm just going to take a couple of extra of these. Just not even thinking, just kind of on autopilot. And then I was like, well, that ran out. So what's the next best thing? It was codeine. And so I started buying that and I would take four at a time with paracetamol on them, which is very dangerous.
Not to be recommended. Yeah, go on.
Not to be recommended in any way, shape or form. Not great.
And you stopped that, I assume. How long was that period of time where you were kind of doing that, hiding around corners?
I think on and off for like a year, maybe a couple of years, but like on and off, I would stop and be like, this is ridiculous, why am I doing this?
And I spoke to people the other day, actually, we were talking about sulfadine addiction, or sulfadine.
Okay, well, that's what I was taking.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But when Irish people call it sulfadine, but it's actually sulfadine. But there is a sulfadine addiction, and it's a real problem in society. I talked to one woman, and she was taking like 20 a day, you know?
I think on a bad day, like there would be moments where I would do that. And I think it's crazy, but I think the pharmacists look at people like they know what's going on. They must see it a lot. It's really worrying that it's so freely available.
Yeah. So what did it feel like when you kind of took the sulfadine? Did it take you back to when you were numbing yourself with the alcohol?
Yeah, it just, well, cause it's like an opioid, isn't it? It is an opioid. So it was the closest I felt like I could get to drinking without the consequences.
Drinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get you.
And so it just felt a bit numbed and a bit sort of, and a bit of a buzz as well, which I'm addicted to that feeling.
So how are you now? You're good now. You're sober 9 years. You're off the sulfadine again now. You're off the kind of those kind of things now. So you're feeling okay now? You're feeling good? Are you feeling like you're coping well?
Yes, feeling amazing. I got married this year.
Well done. And congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I was like the only sober person at that. So, which is hilarious. And I went to drama school, did the thing. I'm out there doing the things I'm passionate about, being creative and talking about sobriety as well. I'm trying to get young people in particular excited about it if they feel like they have a problem.
I think young people are better at it now, by the way. I think young people now are better.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they are, I think they're more health conscious. And I think they're kind of like, that's actually just poisoning me, maybe. Or that it's,
you know,
I don't feel
good. You know
good
who the worst group are at the moment? Okay, I'm going to say this. It's going to come across weird sexist, okay? But the worst groups, and particularly since COVID, the worst.
Wine mums.
Yeah, these kind of 35-year-old women sitting at home drinking not a bottle of wine, a crate a week. That's the worst group at the moment. And doctors have even said they're seeing an increase in women of that age group presenting with liver problems in hospital. So that's a problem.
Yeah, I saw an article about that. It was something. I also saw a thing about women in the UK are the top binge drinkers in the world.
Oh, God. I'd say the Irish are keeping up with them. Yeah.
That's, yeah, we're come on,
but
guys.
But here's the thing. I worked in the nightclub industry for 35 years, okay? As
right.
a DJ, as well as a presenter in radio. I worked in the nightclub industry for 35 years. And we uh-huh. used to have, in Dublin, more nightclubs per head of population than any other city in the world, okay? We were really outgoing. We were great. But now, in Dublin, we had about 35 nightclubs at one stage, just in Dublin City, and that's a population of 1.5 million people. Now we have a situation where there's only three. So you can see the culture of drinking. Three.
Wow.
Three nightclubs. Yeah. Okay. So now there was a few late bars and stuff like that as well, because the late bar kind of thing killed the nightclubs too. And the smoking ban killed the nightclubs. There's a lot of nails in the coffin for the nightclubs. COVID was the final nail in the coffin. But you can see that young people now, there's a culture of not drinking as much, of not going out and staying out at 3 o'clock in the morning getting hammered. That culture is slowly but surely for young people is disappearing, which is a good thing, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, who was that I saw the other day? I feel like it was Calvin Harris or somebody who was like, let's make sober raving cool. Because, you know, if you enjoy the music, why do you need to be off your face for it? I mean, like, that is obviously it's up to individuals. And I never want it to be like, seem like I'm coming off this in a high horse kind of way, because everybody around me drinks and I'm so totally comfortable and cool with that. And it's like, obviously it's a completely personal choice, but also like, as long as there's the option out there for people to know, like, it's, you're not weird. And I think when I first stopped drinking, I was considered a complete weirdo 9 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I was a weirdo all my life because I didn't drink.
Yeah.
I worked in the industry. Every other DJ I knew was kind of getting hammered as they were doing their set. I wasn't, you know what I mean?
Which is so, that is so, like, because that's starting to happen now, is that DJs are, you're starting to see sober DJs. So yeah, you must have been quite the front runner in that sense.
I remember some of my mates who were DJs, and they'd say, oh, I got a new gig in such and such a bar on Friday night. And I go, oh yeah. I said, how much you get? And he go, oh, it's great. Like, you get 300 quid and as much drink as you can drink behind the bar. That's okay. And I'm going, so that's part of the gig. Like, that's part of the deal. That you got free alcohol. But okay, so let's have a few tips. We're coming up to Christmas. This is a tough time for people who don't want to drink, okay, for Ireland and England. So what are the tips for kind of avoiding drinking at Christmas if you want to have a sober Christmas?
I think, especially if it's your first sober Christmas, you have to be really intentional. So if you're going to be around other drinkers, so let's say you're going to Christmas parties, always make sure you've got a get-out route is my first thing. So don't be relying on other people for a lift. Make sure that you've got an emergency plan to get out of there in case you feel like, oh, I want to drink, and you don't want that to happen. I think having
people. Don't go
that
on the boogie bus. Yeah, don't go on the. If it's a party, don't go with the boogies. Bring your own car with you if you're not drinking.
100%. Yeah, don't get stuck in a party. And have somebody that you can confide in. If that's someone you can text and be like, I'm having a bit of a rough time, I'm struggling. Or I just think sharing a drinking sore, if you feel like you're going to drink, sharing it drains the power out of it. It's that whole problem shared, problem halved thing. It's so true. So if there is somebody that you can confide in, community is a really important thing. Having something that makes you feel a bit special in terms of a drink. So I drink loads of coffee, which is so weird. And people are like, are you drinking coffee at a Christmas party? I'm like, yeah. And what?
Yeah, I drink Red Bull, which is not probably very good for
okay.
me.
I used to do the Red Bull, and
I have a can
and then
here.
I started getting really bad heart palpitations.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, it's a bad habit. I need to stop, but I drink about 3 cans of Red Bull a day.
Oh my God, do you not get heart palpitations?
No. Sometimes it stops. If I drink it too late, I end up in bed moving my legs all night.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of feel like you need to do a run in bed.
Yeah, exactly. It flutter. I thought used to feel my eyelids fluttering. Wow, you're a machine. That's really impressive.
So yeah, I do like the Red Bull. I find in the mornings, this is terrible, right? But I get up in the mornings, I'm usually up about 7 o'clock, and then by about 10, I have to have a can of Red Bull. I do a podcast live at 12 o'clock every day. I have to have a can of Red Bull, otherwise my brain is not functioning properly. If I don't have the can of Red Bull, I'm slurring my words, everything. And so that's what I do. And this is a habit from the nightclub days. So when I was working in the nightclubs, my downtime was usually about 6 o'clock, where I kind of go, oh, because I was working on the radio during the day, doing the nightclubs at night, and I'd drink two cans of Red Bull during the gig to keep me awake, and then I'd be awake till 4 a.m. It'd be great.
Wow. I mean, it gives you wings, right? So
yeah, so they say. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get caffeine as well. Like, I'm the same. I really enjoy caffeine. And we're not saints, right? So like when people go like, oh my God, I'm drinking Red Bull. I remember there were certain people that like, don't drink Red Bull because it's giving you like the same sensation as alcohol or whatever in terms of like it don't get addicted to it. And I was like, yeah, but I'm also like, if it helps, then
yeah, you can't have a halo on your head either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, we've got to have something. So copious amounts of chocolate and coffee is the thing for me. So
here's another thing that I say to people. Don't feel guilty. If you're a couple and you've got a couple of kids and you're going to be inviting, you know, aunts and uncles and people over to your house for dinner, don't feel guilty if you don't have cans in the house. This idea that you must, you know, even though you are not drinkers, that you must have cans or drink or whiskey for other people. I don't get that. I don't have drink for other people in the house. If they want to come to my house, they don't drink. You know, I'll bring your own.
I think like, I just think, you know, yeah, bring you, if you want to do it, if it's your thing that you're into, then yeah, sure, people can bring their own drink. Like, don't feel like you have to, especially if you find that triggering. Like, why should you have that in your house if you don't, if it's something that triggers you?
Yeah. Well, look, have a lovely sober Christmas, by the way. And I know people follow you online, by the way. You're on Instagram, I assume.
Yes, and TikTok.
Okay, tell people where they can go to find you. Because you're very upbeat and you're very cheerful, and I think you'd impress a lot of people who want to stay sober.
Thank you very much. And it's so late as well. This is way past my bedtime, so I'm surprised I'm so upbeat. But I very much enjoyed talking to you. So you can find me on TikTok. It's Izzy Hawkins_. And you can also find me on Instagram. I think those are all the ways you can find me. Maybe
now,
there
Izzy
are others.
Is spelled, by the way, in case people are wondering, it's spelled with two S's.
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not two, yeah. Okay, so it's
I-S-S-Y. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that made sense to me as a child. It's Isabel with an S. Why shouldn't it be Izzy with S's?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Izzy Hawkins. You'll find her on TikTok, on Instagram, and all the usual places that you find people. And if you just search the word sober.
Yeah, I'll be there.
You'll be there. Very inspiring person, I believe, too. I was talking to my producer about you earlier on, and she was telling me you're a very inspiring person. And my producer said, by the way, Jane, she doesn't drink either. She's having a sober Christmas. We're
all the best
like
people.
Summer radio station for Christmas. We're all, well, I can't actually
love
say that.
Actually,
to be honest with you, now there's a few of them drinking here. But we're having a sober Christmas. Except my producer.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing.
Izzy, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Have a wonderful sober Christmas. All right. Thank you very
you
much
too.
For joining us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.